Spirit Blade Underground episode
488.
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome again to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I am Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, my review of Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water. And also, I'm going to share what I think is the significance of Christmas and the ministry of Christ as described through the lens of storytelling. A few years ago, I've actually shared this on the podcast before, I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and then 2 or 3 years prior to that, our church had asked me to write a series of kind of like little asides, or I don't know, there's a word for it, and I can't think of what the word is right now, but like, geez, just these brief kind of like 2-paragraph or 3-paragraph little asides that would be interspersed throughout the Christmas Eve service and just kind of give focus to the evening and create a theme for the evening. And the theme that they wanted me to write on was story, and to basically reflect on what Christ has done in coming to earth, in what he did in his ministry on earth, and what he's accomplished for us through the kind of like the metaphorical lens of storytelling, of an author writing a story and the characters in that story. And so while it definitely should not be pressed, I want to stress this, should not be pressed for any kind of like, you know, theologically precise language, you know. My hope is that it will just be a refreshing kind of look and a different perspective through metaphor at some truths that maybe have become a little ho-hum, and we've lost the sense of wonder, the sense of mystery, the sense of magnitude in what Jesus has done. So that's the intent there. I hope that's something that you guys will enjoy and find meaningful. All right, so we got a few things to get to. Let's get to them. Every now and then people ask me what's on my mind, so I thought I'd take a minute to answer that question. Now pay attention, please, because I don't think I can do this more than once. All right, this part is my parietal lobe, and if I dig back in here, I can pull out some of my occipital. And I don't know what this part is, but whenever I touch it, I smell peanut butter. Well, I want to apologize again for those of you that were really hoping to get a review of the Guillermo del Toro movie The Shape of Water this week. Just not meant to be, I guess. So instead, I'm bringing you my favorite geeky Christmas movies. And this is actually exclusive to the podcast this week. I already realized that I have enough content for the YouTube channel. Maybe I'll make a YouTube video out of this, you know, content concept at some point. But for this year, it is exclusively for the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. Let me just share with you my... is this a top anything? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's just 8. So it's not a fancy top whatever round number. It is in alphabetical order. But for those of you who may not know, every year I run and organize this caroling ministry that specifically brings gift bags to those in our church family that are just going through some really difficult things. And so we bring a gift bag and we sing Christmas carols to them, and what many people consider to be kind of like, you know, kind of a weird, cheesy, traditional type thing. For whatever reason, God seems to use it in our local church to really move and affect people and remind them that their church family loves them and that they are not forgotten by God. And so that's something I've been doing for, this is like the 11th or 12th year that I've been doing it now. And it's largely a solo run affair, apart from those that I recruit to bake and donate a little bit of money and or sing. But all the organization and stuff like that, just all the nuts and bolts of making it happen is largely something I've put on my shoulders because I'm crappy at delegating. So, and this season has been extra super busy, but Which is why I wasn't able to really kind of re-record and re-edit the podcast after the mix-up with The Shape of Water. But anyway, all that circling back, part of that annual caroling ministry that I do involves me just baking to make up for anything left over that isn't covered by, you know, the however many baked good donations we get. So I have this big baking day. That's where all this was going. I have this big baking day that I call my bake-a-thon. Every year, my Christmas bake-a-thon, I just spend a whole day baking. And I'm not particularly into baking. I mean, I'm okay at, you know, if you give me a recipe, I can usually follow it. I often don't have the patience for it, but, you know, I'm not super into baking for the sake of baking. And so I pass the time during my annual Christmas bake-a-thon by putting on just a marathon of geeky, what I call geeky Christmas movies. I also will put on some Christmas episodes from geeky TV series like the Batman animated series, Justice League animated series, Farscape. You know, maybe I'll talk about those specific, you know, Christmassy episodes of geeky TV shows in another year. This year, I'm just going to talk about the movies that are often part of that big marathon, and I'm going to just go through them basically in alphabetical order. There's not a particular order of preference here, and just give you my basic thoughts. First off, identify where the Christmas element is, and then give you my basic thoughts on the movie. Now, what qualifies a movie on my particular list as a geeky Christmas movie? Well, I'll just tell you up front, Die Hard is not on this list. And that's not because I don't think it's an awesome Christmas movie that's unconventional because it's, you know, an action movie. It's because in my book, I don't also consider it a geeky movie in the sense that, and yeah, I know the geek has been redefined in recent years, but when I think of geeky and, you know, and this is the definition I base all of Christian Geek Central on, it's something that's probably going to be fantastical in some way. It's going to be science fiction or fantasy or horror or superheroes, you know, something, you know, a concept that is just not possible in the real world right now, you know. and yes, you could, you know, nitpick and argue. It's like, okay, well, you take your typical action hero movie of the 80s and 90s, they're gonna do plenty of things that aren't possible in the real world. Okay, yes, I get that, but you know what I mean, right? So anyway, that's why that is, as much as I love Die Hard as a Christmas movie experience, that's why it's not on this particular list. Everything on this list is going to be sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, something along those much more fantastical lines even than the kinds of things you would find in a action hero movie. So starting the list, again going in alphabetical order here, is Batman Returns. And this is also the one that's been on my list the longest. I mean, it was like the first of this crop of, you know, before I started actively looking for geeky movies that had a Christmas element in them, I put on Batman Returns during my bake-a-thon every year. At first, that was the only one I watched, but then I started needing to bake more and more and more, and so I needed to find more things to watch. But this is the first on my list, and it's also been on my list the longest. And if you haven't seen it, it's basically set during the Christmas season, and it doesn't quite go all the way of, like, you know, saying having like a Christmas message or a Christmas theme or whatever like that, but it comes pretty darn close. I mean, you know, there's lots of trappings of Christmas in not just the background of scenes, but in the dialogue as well. You know, there's a whole shtick with Catwoman talking about a kiss under the mistletoe, both with Bruce Wayne and with Batman, and then at the very end of the movie, the final line as Batman is thinking. Thinking about, or as Bruce Wayne is thinking about Selina Kyle, Catwoman, he says, Alfred says, "Come what may, Mr. Wayne, Merry Christmas," you know, and then he says, "Merry Christmas, Alfred, goodwill toward men and women." You know, so there's kind of like a feminist kind of theme going on in Batman Returns. So it's not like there's not like a Christmas miracle type thing, but there's tons of references to Christmas in the dialogue and, of course, in the background and the setting and stuff like that. And so it's probably also the one on this list. If I think here, let me scan ahead really quick. That, yeah, it's the one on this list that most fully incorporates Christmas into the story and everything else. So, so Batman Returns, and I love it for the Danny Elfman score. I'm a big fan of Danny Elfman's early score work that he would do typically with Tim Burton films. Now he's scoring for everybody in the world, but he used to really work primarily with Tim Burton, and I just really loved his la 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 la, that kind of weird, whimsical yet dark sounding feel to so many of his themes, and then you add sleigh bells to that, and we'll get some of that actually in another movie down this list, because he scores another movie that's on my list, and they got the same kind of stuff going on, which I really enjoy. So that's a really memorable part of it. So for every year, basically, except for this year, I think maybe one other year I missed it, but this year my Bakeathon just didn't take hardly any time at all, for reasons I won't go into, but it was awesome that it didn't take so long. So I actually didn't get to it this year, but yeah, I'll either put on the movie or the movie with the commentary. I kind of alternate and stuff. So, this movie's also memorable to me because Batman kills in this. I know people were kind of making a big deal in Batman versus Superman, like, this Batman's killing. What's up? Batman doesn't kill. Okay, well, us old folks were, a number of us old folks were making the same observation when we watched Batman Returns, because in this movie, he, sets people on fire with the jet turbine from the Batmobile. He straps a bomb to some guy's chest and knocks him into a hole, and then the guy totally blows up. So Batman, is actively murdering in this movie. It's a weird animal to go back to, given how superhero movies have changed so much. It has, and it's honestly, I think if I were to watch it for the first time today, I'd be like, yikes, I have no interest in this movie, because the dialogue is still, it's very kind of like cheesy one-liners and stuff all over the place. I mean, now I remember thinking that the cheesy one-liners were over the top with when we got to Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, but they were really just a significant jump forward. There was still a ton of that one-liner stuff going on in this movie already, in the exchanges between Batman and Selina Kyle and stuff. So anyway, it's still one that I think is worth going back to just as kind of like a fun Christmas experience. But I mean, it doesn't hold up for me, anymore on a fresh viewing to, modern superhero movies. All right, I really don't think I'm going to spend that much time talking about each one of the movies on this list. But that one, it's got a special place in my heart, as it's been on my list for so long. Okay, next one, alphabetical order, Hellboy 2. This one qualifies. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that the qualification is not just that it's a geek movie, but what makes it a Christmas geek movie. The qualifications for it being a Christmas movie are very, very light, as you'll see as the list continues. There only has to be basically a reference to Christmas of some kind, like a Christmas tree, or it could be very brief. I mean, I suppose I probably wouldn't put something on this list that just literally just had someone say the word Christmas. But if there's some kind of visual element representing Christmas, then it qualifies. So Hellboy 2, there is a Christmas intro scene. It's a flashback where we see Hellboy with his adopted father, very young. And I think it's like Christmas Eve that he's with his adopted father, and they're talking and stuff. And I don't even think Christmas is part of the dialogue or anything. It's just kind of the night before Christmas. He's telling a story, about to go to bed, and that's it. And then the rest of the movie, if I remember correctly, has nothing to do with Christmas. Anyway, but that qualifies it, and this is a movie that I really enjoy. It's Guillermo del Toro, so if you, want a Guillermo del Toro fix and are on the fence about Shape of Water, assuming you have access to it, then go watch Hellboy 2, or Hellboy 1 for that matter, or any other Guillermo del Toro movie. I like the way he makes movies. I like the creature designs that he typically uses, like in movies like Pan's Labyrinth. Same kind of cool creature design stuff going on in a movie like Hellboy 2. He uses lots of practical versus CG. Certainly still uses CG, but he does as much practical as he can, I think, and I really appreciate that. Love his creature designs, or the creature designs of whoever he works with that, does his visual designs for him. Hellboy 1 and 2 are like these great, as they're as is the source material. material, from what I understand. I haven't really read much of this, much of any of the source material, but you know, fantasy mashed with sci-fi and Lovecraftian horror, you know, and with just the skeleton of a superhero story that it gets put on top of. So yeah, really, really cool stuff. So that's Hellboy 2. Third on my list is Hook, Steven Spielberg's Hook, starring Robin Williams. This one, it's got a Christmas. The movie takes place during Christmas time at the bookends. You know, they start out in London, and they go off to Neverland, and then they come back to London at the end. And during those bookends, it's clear that it's during Christmas time. I think they even say Merry Christmas when they first go to London and they're visiting family and stuff. You know, so that's what qualifies it for this list. This movie, man, I loved it as a kid. I lost interest in this movie as a young adult or a young married man, and then at some point I had kids, and they got just old enough for me to just be having certain thoughts that I wasn't having before, and now I love this movie for all new reasons. I don't love it for, you know, the fantasy wish fulfillment necessarily of, you know, fantasy and Peter Pan and all that kind of stuff, you know. I love that. I mean, that's great, and I'm glad that's still a part of it. I don't think I would enjoy it near as much if it didn't have those elements of fantasy, you know. But you know, this is a movie about being a dad and the struggles of being a dad and the pitfalls of, you know, how we can fall short so easily and naturally as dads, and yet at the same time, what we want to be as dads. I think of course, I'm speaking in very broad general terms. I'm sure there's a dad that feels differently about some of these things than I do, but from my experience, dads want to be their kids' hero. They want their kids to just think, man, my dad is awesome, you know. And there's this great moment where I think it gets a laugh in theaters, you know, but for me, my eyes well up when his daughter has this realization, and she said, Peter Pan's my dad. And wow, I mean, I see the wonder in her eyes, and I'm just like, oh man, I want to be that for my boys. You know, I want them to just think I'm this really cool, amazing guy, you know? And yet dads like me, struggle to want to make time to play with their kids and take interest in their hobbies that are interesting to them, but not at all interesting to us because we're adults and we've moved on to other kinds of hobbies, you know? And so this movie, it's both a challenge and a dream of what this often missing component of fatherhood can be. And for that, it's moving and fun and funny in ways that it never was for me when I was younger. So I still very much enjoy it, but for all different reasons, largely different reasons now. All right, next on my list, Iron Man 3. This is set noticeably during the Christmas season, and I think it's referenced maybe once or twice, but not near as much as say, like Batman Returns. Shane Black, I believe, is the director, and from what I understand, he adds a Christmas element to all of his movies. So I think every single one of his movies is either set during Christmas or has some kind of a Christmas element in it. I think he just really loves Christmas. And so if you're in them, I think he also has done some action comedies like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I can't remember if I enjoyed that or not, but anyway, maybe that's a rabbit hole you can chase down if you're looking for kind of a fun action-y type movie that has a Christmas element. You can go to IMDb and search Shane Black movies and see what comes up. I'm not vouching for them. I really don't know his film history. But anyway, so Iron Man 3 is set noticeably during the Christmas season. But Christmas, I don't think, is really part of the theme. This movie was really enjoyable for me. They amped up the humor, which for me in the Iron Man movies, as much as I, you know, have expressed that, like, I don't really find the Marvel movies funny, the Iron Man movies are the exception. They're the ones that kicked it off. And I feel like the other Marvel movies have been chasing after that ever since, and trying to capture that genie in a bottle that was the original Iron Man. Even Iron Man 2 and 3, I think, are trying to recapture that lightning in a bottle. That's what I was meant to say. But I think they're more successful at it, for my tastes in humor, than the other Marvel movies. And so even though they amped up the humor, it worked for me largely. There were some forced bits, but largely it worked for me. But they also amped up the grimness to balance it. I mean, we're dealing with, at least in the first half of the movie, a villain that very much echoes real-world terrorists, you know? I mean, there's just some imagery that's pretty grim, you know? And so I can see why they would maybe want to amp up the humor to, you know, counterbalance that, if you will. I still have mixed feelings about where they go with the Mandarin character and Trevor. For those, I'm not going to say any more about that for those who haven't seen the movie yet. I would have preferred a more traditional villain and for magic to come into the picture, but evidently they weren't ready to do that until, you know, many movies later with Doctor Strange. So, but I think that they could have done it. I think it could have been cool. I guess maybe they just weren't feeling quite ready for that. But anyway, so yeah, Iron Man 3. Next up, Prometheus. Now, I know that a lot of people don't like this movie. I don't know. I haven't taken any surveys to see what the percentages, but it was enough that I think they felt like they had to make some changes in the direction of the series when they followed it with Alien Covenant, you know. But I loved this movie. And as far as why it fits into Christmas, the Idris Elba character, I can't remember, Elba or Ebla? Elba, I think it's Elba, I can't remember. Anyway, that actor's character, I can't remember the character's name, he sets up a Christmas tree very briefly, and like one, you know, kind of bitter, jaded character says, "What is that?" You know, and he's like, "It's a Christmas tree, gotta keep track of the passage of time," you know. And that's about it. That's like about all he says. It's a quick little reference, and then it's over. And then I think there's a reference at the very end of the movie to it kind of being the first day of a new year, you know. That's it. It's a great sci-fi horror monster movie for me. I think it's got some conversation-starting themes, potentially, about the origin of human life. Alien Covenant kind of retroactively spoils this movie for me. There was a lot that I enjoyed about Alien Covenant, but there were some things that like that this movie kind of like promises at the end of this. It's like that they're going to do, and they're going to that they set up the next movie to be about certain things, about the main character that survives Prometheus going and doing certain things in the next story, and that rug is totally yanked out from under me with where they go with that in Alien Covenant. They just totally drop that, you know, proposed, almost promised storyline. So there's a sense in which Alien Covenant kind of, you know, just knowing that movie exists and it is the follow-up to this one, I'm always going to kind of feel, you know, a little bit crappy as I get to the end of Prometheus now. But it's still a fantastic experience for me, and really, really enjoy it. It is one that I have to wait until the end of my bake-a-thon when my boys are in bed, because it's jacked up. Crazy, gory, body horror stuff, and weird, alien, creepy, liquidy, slushy, slushy, gory stuff. But I love it. I love that stuff. Moving on, Scrooged. Now, this is a much more common kind of what I would call a geeky Christmas movie for a lot of people. It's Robert Zemeckis's modern reimagining of The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It's centered on a cold and selfish TV executive played by Bill Murray. And I watched it this year during my bake-a-thon, and Bill Murray and Carol Kane, who plays the ghost of Christmas Present, were funnier than ever to me this year. I don't know why I wasn't laughing at her as much before, but she was really funny to me this year. You know, I really enjoy it. It's the same classic message of selflessness, so nothing new in that regard. But I'm surprised at how it pulls it off. I feel like a lot of these kind of retellings of A Christmas Carol that you can find in episodes of TV shows or just in other movies and stuff, they can easily be overly sweet and sentimental and just kind of empty at the end of the day. But this one was genuinely and continues to be genuinely moving to me, in addition to being, you know, shocking and darkly funny. I mean, when they go dark with like some of the ghost elements in this, they go dark. I mean, there's like some weird, creepy, macabre, gory stuff. I don't want to say gory, but there's like this... The replacement for the Marley character is like basically this nasty looking zombie with like rats crawling out of his head, and then there's like some visions that Bill Murray experiences before the main hauntings begin that are kind of like disturbing and stuff, and then the ghost of Christmas future when Bill Murray opens up his cloak and looks inside, there's like this empty rib cage with these disturbing, like small humanoid creepy things in there. Oh man, it's really weird and disturbing. And then they do something funny with that actually later in their resolution of the movie too, you know. So Yeah, I love how it has a sweetness to it, and there's some moving moments to it, and it's funny, but at the same time, it can also be disturbing, you know, in some of its visuals. It's a fairly unique movie, and for years I'd forgotten about this movie. For years, it was not on my list. It didn't get on my list until, I want to say, 3 years ago, maybe. Yeah, that sounds about right. About 3 years ago. And I forgot about it. It just was kind of off my radar. It was a movie that I saw, taped it off a TV when I was a kid, you know, and liked it for a while, but then got over it. And then at some point, I think somebody maybe on the Christian Geek Central forums mentioned it to me. It's like, don't forget Scrooged. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so I watched it again, and dang, it had been like 15, maybe 20 years since I'd seen it. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think probably in ways that I didn't when I was a kid. So anyway, Scrooged, definitely enjoyable. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the list here. Just two left. Suicide Squad. This is a much more recent movie. It qualifies because it has Deadshot's. The character Deadshot has a flashback sequence that involves him being caught by Batman while shopping with his daughter during the Christmas season. So that's very much in the background, but I mean, they're walking past department stores. It looks like he's just kind of bought her a Christmas present rather than kind of wrapping one and giving it to her, you know. And, you know, it's snowing, and there's Santa stuff and candy canes in the store windows. And so, you know, it's definitely Christmas, you know. And so that's what qualifies it. You can watch my review for this on at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. This movie is a mixed bag for me. It's but possibly one I would now say that I enjoy more than the recent Justice League. I don't know. I'd have to. You guys can see my review of Justice League for my mixed inner turmoil about that experience as well. But yeah, I guess I'd have to maybe watch Justice League again to say for sure. But I think on the whole, I think I like the end product of Suicide Squad better than I like the end product. Well, the end product of Suicide Squad, the extended cut, more than for sure the theatrical release of Justice League. So anyway, but just back to Suicide Squad on its own merits. Apart from the forced in pop music soundtrack or classic rock soundtrack, which I was like, eh, whatever, you know, and the fairly uninteresting plot, at least to me, I enjoy getting to know and understanding the different characters and their motivations in this movie. You know, it's a kind of a, it's interesting to see the focus being on villains and these, them being the protagonists and figuring out, you know, seeing what makes them tick and how they're relatable in some ways. And then the theme of repentance that comes out in at least two of the characters in this story was really appreciated. And it's got enough of the other things that I like in movies that, that it's still, an enjoyable experience, even though it's kind of a mixed bag for me. All right, and last one on my list, blink and you'll miss the Christmas moment in this movie. But the movie is Watchmen, and specifically I enjoy, I would say, probably the ultimate cut. I think the director's cut, Zack Snyder prefers the director's cut, which does not kind of force in, as if you will, the Black Freighter animated, cell animated stuff. But there's a part of me that's just like, okay, well, it's basically the director's cut just with the Black Freighter stuff inserted, so we might as well throw it in there, then it'll be the full, complete, you know, whatever. But that said, I have, you know, at least once when I watched this movie all in one sitting, fast forward a little bit through the Black Freighter stuff. I get, you know, over multiple readings, I've finally gotten and understood what Alan Moore was saying and doing and its relationship to the main story, but I do think for my taste and my experience with the source material, it's the weakest part of the source material. So anyway, but yeah, blink and you'll miss it. But Dr. Manhattan's flashback in this movie has a brief moment taking place during Christmas, and even says, it's Christmas 1963, and I'm giving my whatever, blah, 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 this Christmas ornament, or so. No, he's giving her earrings or something, not a Christmas ornament. But anyway, this movie was just a phenomenal experience for me. If you don't remember my review from many, many moons ago, it added heart to the already intellectually compelling source material through the actors' performances. You know, I mean, there was certainly some heart in the source material itself, but Alan Moore's work tends to be, I think, much more thinky than it is more like about like compelling characters that you can really relate to and empathize with. And I felt like Jackie Earle Haley's Rorschach And what's his guy's Night Owl? I can't remember the actor's name, but I thought they did some really well. All the actors, but those two stand out, and especially Jackie Earle Haley. Man, they really just stand out. His performance was just wonderful. It really moved me to tears, actually, at one point. Anyway, also Zack Snyder's visual style just keeps me captivated, even as the story is still much more drama than action. That's one reason why maybe this isn't the best one for my bake-a-thon, because I often am only able to kind of listen and half-watch a number of these movies. And so it really, his style is so visual that it would be hard for me to just be busy with my hands and looking away from the screen while this one's playing. But anyway, this movie also played a major role in Zack Snyder getting to have the reins to Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, which I'm sure a lot of people regrets, but for me, I'm very grateful. And in fact, after seeing this movie and seeing, okay, what's he going to do with a proper quote-unquote superhero movie? Watchmen is anything but a proper superhero movie. But, getting a better taste than, say, what he did in 300 for what he would do with superheroes, with capes, with crime fighting, with guys with superpowers and, tight, bright clothes fighting each other, what would he do with that visually? After watching this movie and then hearing that he was going to do the Superman reboot, I was like, holy crap, this could be amazing. So I'm very glad that this kind of was a gateway for him to get Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. The ultimate cut is possibly better viewed an hour or so at a time, like a miniseries, over a few days maybe. But sitting down for the full 3-hour, 35-minute experience in one go was still worth doing more than once for me. As with the source material, this movie touches on topics of human worth, truth versus safety, and the reality of human depravity. It's thought-provoking and moving and eye-catching to me, and man, I love having any one of those things in a movie, but having all three, that is just an awesome, rare kind of combo when I can experience something that I find thought-provoking, moving, and eye-catching all at the same time. Really cool, really cool. So, still really enjoy that one. All right, that's my list of my favorite geeky Christmas movies. What did I miss? What do you think of that maybe would fit on this list, given the parameters that I've set for it? I'd love to hear that from you guys. All right, that's it. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at SpiritBlade.com, nothing's going on because I'm still off grid. The monitor room has descended on rails into bunker mode, and I am unavailable. I'm not checking my email or reading comments on Facebook or YouTube and stuff like that. If I haven't already, I may or may not pop into the forums at some point or more than one time. I don't know. I'm just going to play that by ear during my time off. But I will be back in my office answering emails January 8th. January 8th is when I will start responding to emails and filling any orders that might be there in the order that they were received. So I thank you for your patience. In the meantime, as I look forward to just kind of resting and spending some time with family, really looking forward to that. Hopefully you guys are going to be getting some of that too. Let's see what else at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. I'm not sure when this podcast will go up. It will go up earlier than usual in the week. It will probably go up on maybe as early as Monday or Tuesday. And I think I'm going to put the YouTube content for the week this goes up, and also the 2 weeks following while I'm out. I think I'm going to have it auto post. And so I think that the Shape of Water uncut review will still post on Friday. the week that this podcast episode releases, and then the video version of my top five geek Christmas gifts, which I shared with you guys on the last episode of the podcast. The video version of that, I plan to auto-post so that it will go up on Thursday of the week that this podcast comes out. And along with that, there's some pictures and video and stuff to go along with the geek Christmas gifts I'm talking about, as well as some scripture verses that I didn't read during the audio version last time, but that I put up on screen to hopefully add a little bit of depth, a little bit of extra layer, and maybe some richness to just kind of my random reflections and stuff like that on what Christmas has meant to me in the past and kind of what it means to me these days as I reflect on it when the season comes around. So anyway, hopefully that will be a fun and meaningful video for you to check out, even if you've already listened to last week's episode of the podcast. So anyway, those should be up on the YouTube channel Thursday and Friday, the week that this podcast episode releases. And while you're over there at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, if you want to like, share, and or subscribe, any one or all of those things would be a nice way to help to grow our channel and our community. We did pass 1,000 subscribers a while back, and last time I checked, we were at like 1,050-something already, I think. So so it's exciting to see kind of the channel and the community growing there, and more and more I hope to see more people choosing to kind of connect on the forums with some people that maybe listen to the podcast and stuff. And so anyway, liking, sharing, subscribing, those are ways that we can help to grow our community and get more people connected together, which I'd really love to see happening just increasingly as time goes on. Let's see here. I think that's everything I wanted to cover. Just a reminder again, though, I'd be grateful if you'd leave a review of our audio dramas on iTunes or Amazon. Reviews and ratings for this podcast on iTunes or other podcatchers would be greatly appreciated as well. All right. Right, moving along. There's an ancient story that began before stories were even told. It spans all ages past and reaches forward into eternity. Every day it's being written, even now. It's taking shape, branching in complexity beyond what we can fathom, yet orchestrated skillfully to serve one amazing purpose. Like every other story, this one has an author who creates and populates his world with characters. But these characters have life and freedom. And this author enters the story himself. In fact, the story is about him. And rightly so. For there is no one more interesting, amazing, surprising, powerful, or good than the author himself. And being the highest, the greatest, and most wonderful thing in existence, the author writes his story so that others can see, embrace, and enjoy who he is. The story begins in the beginning, the first beginning there ever was. The author made time, and the universe, and the laws that govern them. He made beauty and purpose and people to possess both. He made it all for himself, but gave the people he made a part to play, a part that would completely fulfill them. He made them to, in some way, be reflections of himself, and to govern and enjoy all of the earth. He gave them each other, designing them to love and be loved. Most incredibly, he provided them with an infinite source of pleasure and fulfillment. He gave them himself. He made them for a relationship with him that would meet their every need and go beyond to give them an eternal life more amazing than they could ever imagine. It was to be a life of adventure and discovery, creativity and wonder, as each character explored and enjoyed the author forever. A gift with value beyond measure, intended for us all. Freedom is one of the author's most mysterious, powerful, and wonderful gifts. Without freedom, love cannot exist. And yet, because of freedom, evil entered the story almost as soon as it began. The characters the author created decided they wanted to write their own story, failing to realize that doing so would never fulfill them. So those designed to be reflections of the author instead tried to make the author a reflection of themselves. From then until now, we have each made the same choice. A thread of irony became woven into the plot as the endless search for pleasure apart from the author now brought pain and empty discontentment. Relationships made for love and enjoyment instead brought conflict and injury. Work, once meant to be invigorating and productive, was now draining and seemingly fruitless. The author's vision of perfect unity and relationship with him was replaced by a broken, dysfunctional collection of self-centered agendas. And though it pained the author in ways we cannot fathom, he would not take back the freedom that made his creation so beautiful, so valuable, and unique. He continued to let his characters write a portion of their own story if they desired, even if it took them away from fulfillment, away from their purpose, away from him, forever. And so the story took a dark turn. It seemed as though the author couldn't possibly write his way to a happy ending, and that evil would remain unleashed and unaccountable. But little did anyone know that the author would introduce a twist to his tale, one that would change everything. Justice is an unusual idea. It's one we like when applied to others, but subtly avoid when applied to ourselves. Justice is somewhat relative. Little justice is demanded upon the killing of a flower, but the cry for justice increases when an animal is abused, and cries out even louder at the murder of a child. The cry for justice always intensifies. The punishment due grows larger as the value of those wronged increases. Imagine, then, the punishment due to those who have wronged a being of limitless value. The author couldn't simply ignore evil and still be good himself. Justice had to be preserved. Countless beings had wronged one of infinite worth, and so owed a payment of infinite value, a payment they couldn't scrounge together no matter how hard they tried. The author was the only object of infinite worth in existence, and from therein came the answer. The author entered the story as he never had before. He became like and lived among his characters, experiencing the pain and harsh realities of the story firsthand. Yet somehow he retained who he was, his perfection, his goodness, his infinite worth were offered in exchange for the lives of his characters. He subjected himself to the full punishment his characters were due. And in that unparalleled transaction, something amazing took place. Freedom, true freedom, was made possible. A call rang out from the author, inviting his characters to be reunited with him, free of the fear of punishment, free of their debt to the author, and with the promise that one day they would even be free of the very presence of evil forever. This future chapter is foreshadowed in the lives of the characters who accept his invitation. The moment they do, the author goes to work in crafting them a new story within the larger one, rewriting their histories and outlining their futures, changing who they are from the ground up. Character subplots that were heading toward tragedies are slowly rewritten into romances. And as each smaller story is united to the larger one, the epic tale becomes beautiful beyond comprehension. Some stories are so suspenseful and exciting that it's hard not to turn to the last page early to find out how they end. But the author invites us every day to do just that, to look ahead and see how the author, the hero of this story, puts an end to all evil. The evil around us and the evil within us. There is nothing so broken that the author can't restore it perfectly and permanently. So a time will come when all of creation is renewed, remade, without the flaws and fractures it once had. The end of the story will be so beautiful and moving that the pain of early chapters will be seen in a new light, and the brilliance of the author recognized. The end of this story gives us hope for today, when our stories aren't written like we think they should be, when the stresses of work and relationships threaten to break us, when pain seems to define our lives. The author knows and feels our suffering because he has entered the story as well. He has come to carry us through it, to see the ending he has written, one that serves as both epilogue and prologue as he begins a new story, one far better than the first, with a happy ending that never ends. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. Again, I apologize for any delay in getting back to you. I am not going to be checking my email until January 8th. While I am on the Christmas vacation. All right, guys, stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, there will be no podcast. Actually, for the next 2 weeks, there will be no podcast. First podcast of 2018, unless somebody does a bootleg podcast again. But you guys are busy. Please, guys, enjoy. Thank you. That was really cool and unexpected when that happened last time. But please, guys, enjoy your rest. Enjoy some rest with your families. And yeah, first podcast that I have planned for 2018 will be Friday, January 12th. That's the plan. And man, I don't know what I'm going to review, because between now and then, Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle is going to come out. That wasn't even on my radar until I saw a trailer for it, and I realized, holy crap, they're reinventing the concept of this. I never sat through the first one because it was, you know, it came along when I was just a little too old for it, I think, or at least my sensibilities, you know, had started moving more toward kind of like serious and stuff, and it was a little bit too much of kind of a kid's movie or something. But if you haven't seen the original, it's about these kids that kind of get pulled into the world of a board game and stuff, and they have to survive in there and win the game and find their way out or something like that. I haven't seen the movie. It's got Robin Williams in it, though. But this one is, it's kind of a sequel/reboot where the game Jumanji has now morphed and changed. It's now a video game. So these guys are, you know, they're like teenagers that, like, once they get sucked into the game, they become, they get different bodies based on the avatars they chose. One of them is actually a girl who ends up in Jack Black's body, and anyway, they're kind of playing around with a bunch of video game tropes, and I'm like, holy crap, okay, well, now I'm on board. So anyway, that one I definitely plan on seeing and probably reviewing. Jeepers Creepers 3 comes out on Blu-ray between now and the next podcast. Beyond Skyline is supposed to be in theaters. I really loved the original Skyline, and so I'm really looking forward to checking out the... So there's three movies there that I don't know what's going on. I don't know what I'm going to review. But and then I'm also was originally planning until, you know, I saw that these three movies, you know, might all call out for me to go and see and maybe review. But I plan to either on that first podcast or maybe it'll get pushed, I don't know. But the best movies, games, and shows of 2017. I've never done anything quite like what I'm planning to do this time. But yeah, I just kind of, it's not exactly like an awards presentation or anything like that. It's just best movies, games, shows of 2017, and best is going to be in quotes. I'll explain what that means when we come around to it. Anyway, till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade Insider. You can get more information from our About page at spiritblade.com. Oh, I had just a little bit of the Canadian about. I'm not Canadian. About. I was born in Montana, which is pretty close to Canada. Anyway, thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, great 2 weeks, and a great time, hopefully, with your families during the Christmas and New Year celebrations. And I also hope that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. Merry Christmas, guys. Bye-bye.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And I just finished Shattered Mirror, the next Mirror Universe episode. This is just Matt McKinney today, no Kim. So this is a direct sequel to the last episode, Through the Looking Glass, where Sisko had encountered his alternate universe counterpart wife and had to deal with her being alive. This time, she comes over and lures Jake over after we've seen that Jake is feeling really lonely because Nog has gone up to Starfleet Academy and... Jake Sisko is kind of a shiftless, hipster, hippie kind of kid. So, he's really a young adult. And so, he doesn't know what to do, and he's missing everything, and then he suddenly sees what his emotions tell him is his mom, even though he knows it's not his actual mom. He's not stupid, just caught up in his emotions. And so, she lures him to the other side, because what they really want is Sisko. Because it turns out, in between episodes, off-camera, was a little detail of the rebels who were fighting against the Cardassian Klingon Alliance took over the Deep Space Nine analog Terok Nor. And they also stole and perfectly crafted an exact set replica of the Defiant. It's like so precise you'd almost think it was the same set they were reusing or something. And they need Sisko because he actually did technical work on the Defiant, and they need him to fix it. So the episode is basically, it's sort of a very mild version of the Helm's Deep battle, where there is a large force coming in to take them over, only instead of hopeless, we have a times race to get the Defiant fixed in time, so that we can be ready to meet this invading force of the enemy and fight them off. Not too much to say about this, because it's basically where the story goes, so other than giving away how it ends, I can't really talk in detail about this. But the gist of this is mostly about seeing what... We see Ben Sisko have to deal with his own conflicted feelings, and like every parent, he has to be the mature one. And so while Jake is sort of in a pseudo, not, obviously not romantic crush with his mom or anything, but just like a, he's back with his mom again, and he's emotionally regressing, and he's actually kind of pathetic in this episode. But he's supposed to be. It's not because they did it badly. But Sisko has to be the grown-up, and he has to see through all the lies and the manipulations, and he has to sort things out, and, you know, that's pretty much the episode. Oh, and we also get to see now Worf is in on the Mirror Universe, and of course, he's a high-up regent in the Alliance, and if actually, he might actually beat Avery Brooks as one of the best villains who normally plays a hero, because Worf, Michael Dorn is really good at doing, like, the cackling. He's like a Darth Vader type. He's very serious and very harsh. He's not, he doesn't, like, laugh out loud and woo-ha-ha and all that. He is, like, the menacing, you know, he'll just clench his fist, like, dark side kind. And, you know, but he's good at that. And so that stuff is amusing, where they, he has Garak literally with a collar around his neck, held onto a chain. And, you know, it's an interesting subplot. Not much more to this episode. It's fun and enjoyable. It's a very middle of the road, and it's also the last time we'll get to see the Mirror Universe before it becomes a ridiculous joke. We've got like two or three more Mirror Universe episodes to go, and they will get sillier and sillier throughout the series run. Until by the end, they're like the comedy episode interlude between the real plot. And that's the thing about the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine, is it's very schizophrenic. It started out as a very dark, serious thing, much like the original Mirror Mirror episode in the old Star Trek show. And it just, because it became more about having fun, being cacklingly evil and over the top, and I don't blame, who wouldn't love being that? I mean, I've done things like that with my own show, POS TOS, a few times. You know, play a villain for whatever reason. And it's fun to do that. You know, and it's a nice deviation to play a different character. So I can't blame them. The problem is that this was the only show to do multiple Mirror Universe episodes. Enterprise had one two-parter near the end of its run. And that was weird because that was completely in the Mirror Universe. They only encountered one thing from our universe, but they never encountered their counterparts. And of course, there was a classic Mirror Mirror Star Trek episode, one of the most famous episodes of all time. That one laid the groundwork. But this is the first time that we got to go back and see, and much like regular Deep Space Nine, the Mirror Universe also changed and had consequences and grew and evolved. But the problem is sometimes it evolved in the wrong way. And especially Major Kira, her character, who started out as, she was menacing, but she was a character. But then she started just being like, oh, I'll just put on my sexy leather and lounge around and I'll just be the femme fatale. And, you know, a little bit of that is okay, but they just start pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And so this is the last time we'll get to see the Mirror Universe actually be a meaningful story. But it was a good story. It wasn't an awesome one. But it was one of the better Mirror Universe episodes we'll see in Star Trek. And it was a decent story in its own right. Again, it's mostly about the Siskos, Ben and Jake, and to a lesser extent, Jennifer, the alternate Jennifer. She has her own thing she's dealing with in this, and it's nice to see the guest star actually have their own story and not just impact the story of our regulars. That's a nice thing, too. Not much more to say about this one, except I wish I could stay here because the next episode is really, really bad. I've already covered it on POSTOS. Next time we'll see you in the Muse. Pray for me, everyone.